This is episode 62 of the Photo Biz Exposed podcast. Today, my special guest is wedding photographer James Day. He's one of the movers and shakers of Australian wedding photography. He's doing things his own way. He shares how and also why it's working so well for him. That interview's coming up in just a minute.
Is photography your passion, your life? Are you aiming for a successful portrait and wedding photography business? Or are you already on your way? Join Andrew as he interviews successful photographers and related experts, sharing the facts on running a profitable portrait and wedding business. Welcome to the Photo Biz Exposed podcast with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Hey, it's Andrew Helmich here from Impact Images, and welcome to another episode of the podcast. I hope you've enjoyed a fantastic Easter. I've had a fabulous time with my family. It's been really good to have 4 days off in a row. This seems to be unheard of these days. I hope you've enjoyed some similar time off. Got a massive show lined up. Like I mentioned, I've got that interview with James Day. I'm looking forward to bringing that one to you. He is an awesome photographer and definitely doing things a little bit different. There's definitely going to be some enlightening tips popping up in that one. We've also got some shout-outs following the interview. I've got a camera strap winner that I can announce following the interview with James. And also, I want to tell you about a special couple of episodes coming up in the following months that I need your help with. But before we get stuck into all of that, I wanted to share an email with you that I received from Greg and Gaylene of Pics in a Click, who are podcast listeners and premium members that are really taking action as a result of what they hear on the podcast. Now, I always make a big point of stressing that the podcast interviews are simply entertainment unless you're actually taking action and implementing what you hear. Well, I had an awesome email message from Greg and Gaylene, and I'm going to read that to you right now. Hi, Andrew. Gaylene and I did our first Lone Ranger, i.e. not as second shooters and strictly shooting for our business, wedding during the week, and it was a destination wedding in Townsville. How's that for a first up wedding? Cyclone Ita seriously threatened it there for a few days, and we even had our flights delayed for a day, so we were lucky we built in a little bit of fat into the schedule to allow for hiccups along the way. Thanks for the destination wedding tips, Michael Steingard, in episode 47. We've implemented the business and shooting systems that we learned in a 3-day workshop that we first heard about on the podcast. Thanks to Matt and Katie, who you interviewed in episode 17, for those tips. I've got more to say about Matt and Katie coming up after the interview. And having a system sure takes the stress and worry out of a lot of things and provides us with predictable results. Although we have a long way to go with our wedding website and marketing material, we've recently had a chat with David Watson, who you interviewed in episode 51, and we'll look to engage him a lot more in the future. David provided us with some excellent tips to help throw our hat in the ring and attract more clientele through Facebook and social media. At the end of the wedding on Wednesday, we produced a mini album for the bride and groom and 2 framed 6x4s for the bride and groom to give to their parents, and what a hit it was. The reaction of the bride was priceless, and the groom was full of praise about his whole day in front of the camera, which has led to some fantastic testimonials from not only the bride and groom, but also from the family. We even had the bride's mum call us the following day, thanking us for our efforts. Priceless advertising for us, and all it cost was about $50 and an hour of hectic mayhem getting it all together. Thanks to Brian Caparici from episode 28 for that little gem. By the way, how cool is the Canon selfie? I can watch that thing forever. It's magic. Last but not least, we've based all our pricing using the spreadsheet from The Spreadsheet Guy. A big thanks to Michael Rommel, who you interviewed in episode 27. I'm sure there are other little gems we've picked up, but the ones above are the most prominent at this point. As you can see, we've picked up heaps along the way and look forward to even more to come. Enclosed is a photo from our first wedding. We are really proud of the job we did, and I'm sure it was all easier due to the fantastic coaching we've received along the way through the podcast. We both keep looking at this photo, and it reminds us that we can really do this. Thanks, Andrew, for everything you do. Your podcast is the most wonderful resource out. Kind regards, Greg Terry. Well, that was an awesome email. I was speechless. I was so happy to actually receive that email. And look, I do receive quite a few emails from different listeners about the different things they've been implementing. But that was an absolute standout. And all the references to the different interviewees that I've chatted to along the way and the different things that Greg and Gaylene have implemented are just truly awesome. And it's so good to hear about their success. So thanks, Greg and Gaylene. So good to receive that message. For you, the listener, if you've implemented something as a result of the podcast, I'd love to hear about it. You can shoot me an email, you can tell me via social media, or if you're feeling really gutsy, you can click on the leave a voicemail button on the podcast show notes page and send me a voicemail that I can play on the podcast. I love hearing about your successes, particularly if they've come as a result of the podcast.
And now, a macro look at the last episode.
In the last episode, I interviewed Billy Murphy from Forever Jobless, and Billy told us that he was starting up his very own podcast, also called Forever Jobless. I haven't checked that out yet myself, but if you're looking for something a little bit different to a photography-based podcast, but still with some great business advice and lots of entrepreneurial ideas, that will be one definitely worth checking out. There were a whole bunch of takeaways from that episode, but there was definitely one that really stood out, and that was that if you can value exchange with influencers in your area when you're not yet at max capacity as far as your workload goes, then that's going to be a super powerful technique for building a great portfolio and also getting your name out there. So if you're not sure what I'm talking about there, get back and have a listen to Billy Murphy. It's a great idea. His blog's definitely worth checking out as well. It's got some great business ideas and tips there. So not specifically targeting photographers, but in a general business sense, he definitely knows what he's talking about. So get back and check that one out if you haven't had a chance yet.
Welcome to another Great Eye for Business. It's time for Andrew's special guest.
Alrighty, I know almost nothing about today's guest, even though he's extremely well known and he's a super talented photographer. For some reason, our paths just have never crossed. Here's what I think I know. He's recently lost a lot of weight. He's recently moved to Sydney from the country. He's married, he goes to church, he's won lots of awards, he's very, very popular on Facebook, he photographs people in love, and he seems like a really nice guy. I'm talking about James Day, and I'm happy to welcome him to the podcast. Mate, welcome.
Thank you. How you doing?
Yeah, really good. I can't believe that we sort of haven't crossed paths at all.
I know.
Along the way, particularly now that you're in Sydney, but I think that's a recent thing, isn't it?
Oh, I think it was 4 years ago now. I decided to move, yeah.
Oh, 4 years ago.
I guess that's fairly recent.
Maybe you better do an intro about yourself. Let the listener know what you do and a little bit about your business, and then I'll take it from there.
Well, I'm pretty sure my wife thinks that I don't do anything. So it'll probably be good for her to listen to this as well. Well, 29, married for a few years, 3 years now. I photograph weddings like you'd expect. I've been shooting weddings for maybe 11 years now. I shoot about 60 weddings a year or so, which is pretty nuts. Based in South Sydney, in San Susi, where I've got a little studio called Your Place or Mine, where I share that with a few buddies. Glenn Edwards and Scott Surplus are also wedding shooters. Yeah, I mean, that's me in a nutshell, I guess.
That's awesome. So 60 weddings, that is nuts. So is it only weddings that you shoot?
Yeah, primarily. I mean, I get asked to do the occasional other things. Sometimes I go along with it and try and book that job. Sometimes I literally just say, you know what, that's not my thing. I'll pass you on to such and such. But I mean, yeah, I'd say it's probably 95% of my work would be weddings. And then the other 5% might be like, I know I had someone, a photographer recently asked me to do a family portrait. So I did that. And then I shot a CD cover from someone who was on The Voice. And that was heaps of fun. So it's kind of like, yeah, 95%, I'd say, is just weddings.
Okay. And is it just you in the business? I know you've got a shared space, but is it just you running James Day Photography?
Yes and no. I mean, I do the majority of it. I don't touch the editing in any way, shape, or form. I still like select and do the cull, I guess you'd call it. But I have someone named Mel, who is my album designer. And I have my wife, who does all the accounts because I suck with money. So she looks after, make sure everyone's invoiced and all that kind of stuff, make sure I'm paying my bills. But yeah, so I either outsource, yeah, and Mel, basically.
When you say outsource, is Mel the only person you outsource to, or do you have people doing your actual color work as well?
Yeah. So I have Raw Digital and Film Lab, which is basically my friends Lisa and Jared, who are here in Sydney, who, you know, for the last years have been doing my editing. Actually, I met them at John Canlis workshop a couple of years ago. His film is Not Dead Guy. And they were all hanging out heaps after workshop each day. And I was going back to the hotel to finish up all my editing and try and stay on top of it. And then when the workshop was finished, I got an email from Jared saying, dude, we might be able to help because your life kind of looks like it sucks because you're constantly editing. And we love editing, so maybe we can give you a hand. And I just haven't looked back since. So I basically supply them with all my edit. Basically, my cull down might be 500 shots or something from a wedding. And then they supply back a Lightroom catalog and I check through it if they're ready to deliver to my client. So it's cut back the amount of work I have to do for each client considerably, which has meant I can shoot some more weddings.
That's awesome. So after you shot a wedding, you do your culling, basically just put everything to disk or do you upload it to Dropbox? How does that work?
Actually, yeah, so Dropbox for sure. But the new Lightroom, I think it's what are we up to now? Lightroom 5?
I think 5 point something just came out, yeah.
Yeah. So basically after I've sorted the photos in Photo Mechanic, then I drag them into Lightroom. There's a little checkbox thing which I can tick that says import as smart previews or create smart previews or something like that. And it basically creates a shrunk down raw file. Then, I mean, just say if I've shot like 500 images to give to them, it's about 1 megabyte per file that it creates. So basically, as I said, shrunken down raw files. And then that Lightroom catalog, Dropbox it, which might take an hour to upload. And then they send me back like a 10 megabyte file in an email a couple of weeks later and export from there.
Awesome. That sounds great. So did you actually work with them to get the colors the way you like them? Like how long did that process take?
Not long at all. I sucked at editing. I was really bad. It definitely wasn't my forte. So for me, I probably was one of their easier clients because straight out of the box, I was like, guys, that's 1,000 times better than what I was doing. I was the kind of guy where, I mean, I loved shooting, but sitting in front of a computer, I'd edit the first 5 or so shots from someone's wedding really well. And then after that, I just get really bored. I just be like, oh man, there's something else I want to do. I just get really lazy, to be honest. I mean, I'm wearing my heart on my sleeve and telling you everything here. I can't believe it. But basically, yeah, I sucked at it. So they came to me with, I think I had to originally send them like 10 or 20 shots. And they sent me back what they would have done to those and then was like, hey, you know, what do you think? Is this good or do you want us to adjust stuff? And straight away I was just like, no, that's it. So I trusted them straight off the bat to just be like, this is how we do what we do best. Because, I mean, it's like sometimes I know with my clients, it's almost like if they give you too much direction, it's like, why did you hire me? Because why can't I just do what I do? So when I went to Raw Digital Lab, I kind of just wanted to let them do what they do. You know, they asked for feedback, but there wasn't really much to give them because they pretty much nailed it straight away. So the time it took to actually switch over from me doing it to them doing it was nothing.
Awesome. Wow, what a weight off your shoulders. That just must free up so much time.
So much, yeah. It's allowed me to spend so much more time on the stuff that just never got done. Like, you know, you'd have these ideas, you go, one day or in winter, I'm going to work on this. And now I can do those things, yeah, during the week. And also I've always had this thing where I've said, if a client's going to take my weekends, they're not also allowed to take my weekdays. I mean, I think as photographers, it's way too easy for us to work 7 days a week. I think that's really dangerous. So I sort of wanted to change that a bit and free up my weekdays to either be working on more fun projects than just sitting in front of Lightroom or taking time off, you know, taking it easy.
Cool. So I think the big question on the listener's lips will be, how much does this cost to outsource?
I'm not sure 100% exactly what their fee is now. I mean, I know they've got their price list on their website. They locked me into prices when I hired them. Obviously, my rate hasn't gone up since, but I think it might be a little bit more. Look, I think for an edit, you're looking at about $300 mm-hmm. to be able to have something that's just ready to deliver, which for some people, they're like, man, that's so cheap. And, you know, that's like 3 days work for me that I won't have to do. For some people, it might be a bit expensive. I had a friend who outsourced it to some Chinese company and they're like, oh, it's cheaper. You know, it's $100. I think they're paying like $200 or something. And I was like, how's the output? Like, is it consistent each week? And they're like, no, not really. It's similar. And I was like, oh, well, so do you know who works on your files? They're like, no, I think I might be a different person every time. And I was like, yeah, that kind of sucks. Like, I know that Lisa works on my files. And if I ever had a problem, I call Lisa and I go, hey, Lisa, we need to adjust that curve you're working with. Or like last year, I shot a celebrity wedding where the wedding needed to be delivered the day after to the magazine. So they stayed up through the night and edited it for me. And, you know, having that kind of relationship with an individual where they actually care about my business, that's been pretty crazy good.
And talking about the guy from China, I think his name's Kevin, and I get an email from him every second day. we're the best editors in the world. We'll do your work cheap.
Yeah, there's a reason why it's cheap.
Yeah. Mate, while we're talking about money, I know the listener loves to know, when I'm speaking to a guest, how much they charge for their wedding packages or their portrait packages. So can you give us an idea of what an average wedding costs to have photographed by you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I do things maybe slightly differently to some photographers. I don't really have packages. Everyone comes in at the same rate, and there's a couple of things that they can add, but it's $49.50, so not $49.50. $4,950, and that is for me to shoot the day and deliver full res color and black and white files. So I give a full set of color and a full set of black and white and Instaproof's gallery. So that's the starting point.
And they get the high res files for that? That's everything.
Yeah, I've made a thing where I say it's full res, because I had a whole bunch of photographer friends who were saying high res and they were delivering like 6x4 size or something. I mean, I want to be busy. I want to shoot a fair few weddings. So for me, as a bit of a differentiation, I can sort of say to my clients, hey, you know, if your photographer, the other photographer you're speaking to has said high res, what do they really mean? Basically put a little bit of doubt in their mind so that they go, actually, maybe we should ask, because it's such an ambiguous sort of term, just saying high res. So I've always made a thing to say full resolution and then explain that, you know, the files are going to be huge and they won't be watermarked and all that. Yeah, I'm more than happy to give them away, and I don't make a big fuss over the files. I mean, I don't get too protective over them. They're their photos. I want them to be able to enjoy them.
Okay, and then many couples then go ahead and get an album following that?
Yeah, I'd say 80% end up with an album. So I've priced those quite affordably. They start at $1,000.
Oh, wow.
And that's for an 8x8 leather vision art with 20 pages. So the entry point's fairly straightforward, and then we make it easy for them to be able to upgrade to more pages, bigger sizes, et cetera, et cetera, with zero pressure. Because I've got this studio here in Sydney, the first thing I do when people walk in the door is I hand them an album and I go out the back and I go and make them a drink and I try and get them used to seeing my work in a book. So I try and plant the seed as quickly as I possibly can that, hey, you know, my clients get albums, so they get albums, like most. It's an exception for a client not to purchase.
Is that because you've got a bunch of photographers, they're all trying to share the same wall space? Is that why you've gone down that road? So you can't show them wall prints, you want to show them albums?
Yeah, definitely. When I had my own studio previously, I did do more wall prints. I just chose to keep it super simple and just make it about albums. But yeah, certainly it'd add an extra hassle if we were all trying to show off our prints and stuff. Every time someone came in having to change the photos that were up on the wall.
Yeah, for sure. So the other guys you're sharing with, are they wedding photographers as well?
Yeah, they're very, very talented photographers. We've got Glenn Edwards, who shoots film primarily. So he shoots on his contacts and a few other things. And you've got Scott Surplus, very cool guy who shoots digital, but, you know, mainly shoots weddings as well. Yeah, we're actually looking for someone else to join us at the moment because we've got a free desk. So
nice.
Just a little plug there.
Very good. Very good. Well, if people are interested, they can get in touch with you for sure.
Yeah.
Let's step back a little bit to when you started, because you kicked off your business in a country town, not a small country town, but a country town nonetheless. And, you know, how fast did business progress for you once you got into wedding photography?
Actually, so much quicker than I ever would have dreamed. I was quite fortunate. I shot a wedding for a couple who were quite well known in my community. You know, one, he was like the bank manager and she was the receptionist at the local dentist. So between them, they met a lot of people and they had excuses to chat to people constantly. So yeah, I shot this first wedding. Everything went wrong. Actually, do you want to hear the story about my first wedding?
Yeah, go for it.
Pretty crazy. Okay. So I had a Fuji S2 Pro, which I saved up and bought when I was 17 or 18 or something. And I bought a Sigma 28-70 or 24-70, whatever it was, 2.8. So I had one camera and one lens and I shot everything on that, you know, for a year or so. And then I decided, all right, for this wedding, I need to buy myself a new kit. So I went and got myself the new Konica Minolta 7D or something, because I had a whole bunch of old Minolta lenses. Anyway, for the Minolta kit, I only had the one battery because the camera turned up like the day before and, you know, didn't have accessories and stuff. So the morning of the wedding, I decided, I wonder if the batteries from the Fuji, which I had plenty for, will fit into the Minolta. They got stuck. So there was now my Minolta stuffed. I was now down a battery for my Fuji kit. And one of the reasons that I decided that I'd switch to this Minolta thing was because the Sigma lens was not always focusing. It was starting to die. Anyway, so I was like half an hour before I was due to go. Look, I didn't even have my license at this point. I think my mum dropped me off. This is how like amateur it was. Turned up to this wedding, was about 20 minutes, half an hour into getting ready photos. And this lens, which had been playing up, just completely stopped working. So I was now first ever wedding with no camera, like just literally no manual focus, no autofocus, just camera's fine, lens stuffed. So I've never been able to touch Sigma lenses since. I've always just been scared. Even though I hit it good, I just.
What did you do?
So I called a mate and he dropped off some cameras after, but it was a Canon system and I'd never used a Canon camera before. I think it was a 10D or something and a whole bunch of prime lenses. I'd never shot anything faster than 2.8 and he's dropping these like f1.8 lenses off. Actually really surprising I got anything in focus because I would have shot everything at 1.8 having never shot wide open like that before. Somehow I did a good job of this wedding, according to the client and according to their friends. Remember, I stayed up all night editing the photos in iPhoto. Remember, I shot 1,623 photos and I delivered 1,623 photos. I stayed up all night editing them in iPhoto. They're all slightly different in the way they're edited and, you know, some are horrible sepia and all this kind of rubbish. But the next morning, because I heard they're having a breakfast, I printed up a whole bunch of photos on my little Canon printer and then turned up at the breakfast and was like, hey, you know, here's a gift from me. And I remember one of the bridesmaids was just like, you're going to shoot my wedding one day. And she was a model. And I shot her wedding and I shot so many weddings shortly after that because their friends just got talking and they got talking about this guy who stayed up through the night and turned up the next morning and did this and that and, you know.
How cool.
And I was really cheap, like so cheap. I think $700 and I'd come and shoot your wedding all day and, you know, yeah.
Awesome. That is so good. That is so good. So do you attribute it then all the extra bookings coming from, look, it's probably a combination, but like from the style of photography, like the way you were shooting, the fact that you delivered something the next morning and stayed up or the fact that you're cheap?
Oh, well, definitely all three. Being cheap definitely helped at that point. People, obviously, if they can get a bargain, they'll most people are sensible enough to try and get a bargain. But there's also something interesting, I think, about the fact that I had absolutely no idea. So at that point, 10 or 11 years ago, photography was incredibly staged. I remember the guy I was working for at the time, he took one candid photo the whole day. Like his admission, he would say his one candid shot from the whole day was as the bride and groom walked back down the aisle together. Everything else was in some ways contrived. So for me, turning up to a wedding, I didn't know how to pose anyone. I didn't know how to set anything up. And when I was shooting a wedding for a young, cool couple and I wasn't setting anything up, I don't know, I had no idea. I was literally just playing and just going, cool, well, I might try this out. I don't really know, but I'll try this out. And then the stuff that I was producing was so different to what I guess the more old school photographers were shooting at that point. Yeah. So I think in some ways, the fact that I had no idea what I was doing actually worked to my advantage.
So what about then if you were to start again today or you're giving advice to someone that was starting out today? I think it'd be a lot more difficult to stand out and it's a lot easier to see what other people are doing. What would you do to the photographer that wants to take up wedding photography and they're trying to scour the internet for ideas and inspiration?
I could answer this so many different ways. Look, sometimes I would answer this question by saying, you know, work under another photographer, get the experience, know your gear back to front, make the mistakes while you're assisting someone else, you know, and be able to replicate what they do. But then, as I said, there's still that merit in just going, look, I have experience in this other field. Like if you look at so many brilliant photographers these days don't obviously come from someone who's just been photographing weddings since they finished high school. They've had another career and they've brought something from their past life, you know, into their new career. And I think they're the people who are kicking ass. And I think because of that and because they're not just following someone else's path, they're being noticed. So yes, you can copy and that's, I guess, the safe way and you can see what such and such photographer is doing and what software they're using and what presets they're using and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it'll be a nice safe way to enter the market, but you're probably less likely to stand out. Does that kind of answer your question?
It does. And I think that to stand out, you have to almost separate yourself from what other people are doing. You have to be confident enough or to trust yourself enough to just do what you like to do. But that's hard.
Exactly. You've got to have clients as well where they're fully prepped and ready for you just to do what it is that you do instinctively, which I think is also hard because that involves being organized enough to have those conversations. It involves having a portfolio which reflects that, you know, you do what you want to do rather than what the wedding industry and what wedding magazines tell you or tell the client that they should be doing or should be looking for.
So is that the way you shoot now? When you have a client meeting, do you tell them, look, these are my sample albums, this is just an idea of what I shoot, but yours is going to be different?
Yes. So one of the sample albums I pull out, I say, look, this is an example of their wedding. Your wedding will look nothing like this. The one thing I can guarantee is that the finish of the images will be the same because that's standardized, you know, with the Raw Digital and Film Lab. You know, certainly there's shots that I'll do at every wedding. You know, I definitely want to make sure I get a shot of you and your mum. You know, I want to make sure I get just a nice, easy, simple shot of you guys both looking at the camera because grandma will love it. But apart from that, I just want to turn up and have a great time and try some crazy stuff that I've never tried before. Yeah, and then obviously balancing that out with, as I said, the few safe shots that you know will keep them and their family happy. But yeah, definitely those conversations are important.
When I listen to you just give that little spiel there, I mean, I feel excited. I think you sound like the photographer that I want to have at my wedding, but I'm sure that some couples will be thinking, man, this could be really bad because we're not really exciting people.
Yeah.
Do you get that feeling when you're talking to couples sometimes, or they just go, we love that, James, you just go crazy?
Isn't that fantastic though? Like, I think if some couples are turned off by the way that you approach it and they're actually concerned about an aspect of you shooting their wedding and they realize that beforehand, that's brilliant. Like, I love it when couples don't book me. I mean, I think I'm doing something right. Like, honestly, if every single couple who I met booked me, I would be way too standard. I would be way too safe and my job would be way too boring. You know, in the same way, and I've met couples where I've got to the end of the meeting, I've gone, guys, I could book you in right now, but I don't feel like I'm going to be the best photographer for you. I actually say to them, I feel I'd be doing you a disservice if I shot your wedding, because I know that they might just be hiring me for, I don't know, like I met a couple, it was a while ago now, where they wanted completely opposite things to each other. And I knew it would just be a nightmare if I had to shoot it, because I'd be constantly be worried about, well, hang on, he wants me to shoot this way, but she wants me to shoot this way, but I want to shoot this way, blah, 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 blah. Too much going on, way too much. So yeah, I wouldn't be too concerned if a couple actually felt like I wasn't a good match.
Mm-hmm. If you lose a booking, do you ask why?
No. I mean, I think it's usually pretty obvious.
Oh, well, it could be price as well.
Yeah, and that's fine because my price isn't going to work for everyone.
Would you rather not book a wedding because of your price or because they don't want you to shoot their wedding?
I don't know. You know, like if I missed out on a really cool wedding because of my price, yeah, that sucks. And that happens. Probably I'd prefer them not to hire me because it wasn't a good match.
Yeah, okay, cool. If they trust you to do what you do and you really do go all out, have you ever had clients that you sense, I mean, they may not tell you, do you sense that these guys just aren't into these photos like I am and I was when I created them?
Yeah, I think that gets less and less. Once your prices get reasonable, like, you know, once you raise your price a little bit and you actually spend the time, you know, vetting the couple, I think you can help get them excited before the day and you'll weed out the people who aren't going to be as excited. Or it might be when they're putting your album plan together. You're just like, you really just chose all the boring photos from your wedding. What about this crazy stuff we did that, I mean, I loved, but I mean, it's not my album. So, I mean, I can't get too involved. It's their photos. That's how they want to remember it. So
do you do the album design part yourself as well? Or is that outsourced?
So yeah, that's Mel.
Okay.
Who worked for me. So she comes in generally on the weekends, meets the couple, and that's done in person with them. So we literally get all the photos printed as 6x4 prints. We have an empty album, basically, some blue tack, and they lay out the book. So she's a graphic designer. She gives them help and goes, yeah, maybe that shot of the groomsmen drinking beer won't flow so nicely with all those romantic shots of you together as husband and wife. Maybe we could make an extra spread of that. So she'll make some suggestions. Yeah, she works on that with them and we let them do as much of that as they possibly can so that when they actually do end up upgrading, you know, adding extra pages, et cetera, they're purchasing from us rather than being sold to.
Okay, because they're adding the pages themselves.
Yeah, so we have that book and they sit there and they blue tack these prints into a book. And, you know, when they've got that print in their hand and they can go, oh, do we like this one or do we like this one? And then they choose that one and they feel connected to that one over another one. That obviously solidifies in their mind. Then when they blue tack the shot into the book, it's basically super gluing it in and they're going, yep, that's it. And then they get to the end of it and, you know, they might realize they've maybe spent a little bit more than they originally thought they may. But, I mean, often the guy goes, honey, if it's going to look like that, I want it. You know, that looks brilliant, bloody brilliant, you know, whatever it is.
This whole design process sounds really old fashioned. So you've actually got 6x4 prints that you're sticking into a book manually.
Yeah. So, you know why? Because when we try and take things out of people's hands that are so important and precious to them, they're going to be pissed off. I mean, I know that the modern way, I guess, might be to design a PDF and then we send it to them with, you know, an 80-page album and be like, hey, guys, you know, look at this big monster of an album I've made for you. But if you buy it, you know, as it is, I'll give you a discount and blah, blah, blah. And then they get annoyed because you didn't put this shot in. And then you say, oh, but that's okay. We can switch out this photo and that photo. And then the process goes for months. You get annoyed over all the emails that they're, you know, sending back and forth, and they're ripping apart your precious album design that you slaved over for hours and hours. 6 months later, put it on a back burner and go, oh, too hard. And then their friends say to them, hey, have you got your wedding album yet? And they go, no, our photographer still hasn't done it. Yet you think you're waiting on them and they think they're waiting on you. And to be honest, no way. Never, would never do that again. Used to do it that way, because I was told that I should do it that way by another photographer. And it hurt my business more than any other practice I've ever had, that I've ever put into place. Yeah, it was crazy. And spending the time with them going, we care about this album too, and we will help you put together the album that you want. And then at the end of the day, they can, you know, sit there and flick through the book and go, that looks fantastic. And then it's all done. There's no more. Like, literally the next thing they hear from me is I send them an email to say, hey, just heard from Vision Art. They're telling me your album is going to be here on this date. Where would you like me to send it? Album came in today, 2 weeks after we've ordered it. You know, they were literally, they're in here 2 weeks ago, designed their album straight after their honeymoon, and they'll have their album tomorrow.
Wow. Okay. That's so cool.
Yeah. It speeds up the process, gets them excited. Because often as well, if we end up just sending them a PDF or whatever, it might be just one of them who deals with it and then has to try and make a case to the other partner to spend all this extra money on an upgrade. You're better off just having them both there and for them to be able to make the decisions together as they're going. And if all they want is a simple album, they can actually do that without any stress, and they can walk away like a very happy couple with what you've done for them and not spend any extra if that's what they're wanting. And, you know, we shouldn't push stuff onto people. So I think we just should help them get what they want, and that's what we sort of do.
Sure. Mate, I want to talk just a little bit more about this album stuff. We're going to say goodbye to the podcast listeners, but I'm going to keep you on the line for the premium members. And through the magic of the internet, we're going to bring the other podcast listeners back and let everyone know where they can check you out. Where can people check out more of your work and follow what you do so we can have more Instagram photos coming through our feeds?
Yes, just what we want. So Facebook, I think it's facebook.com/JamesDayWeddings. Instagram is James Day Weddings. Website, which is jamesday.com.au, and on Adult Matchmaker. No, I'm just
kidding. Mate, I'll add links to everything that you've got going on there. Is the jamesday.com.au, that's the main website?
Yeah, I'm actually about to rebrand. So in the next coming weeks, my business is actually going to be called Daylight. So it'll be daylight.com.au, but I'm sure it'll redirect and that kind of jazz.
Wow. So what's the reason for that?
I don't know. Just felt like it, basically.
Who's got time to rebrand?
I don't do editing anymore, remember? No, I don't know. I'd love to have some great reason as to why, but I literally just felt like, I was like, oh, Daylight, that sounds fun. I'm going to change my business to that. You know what? In 12 months, I'll probably change it again. Yeah, I like change.
Mate, it's been an absolute pleasure. And like I said earlier, I can't believe our paths haven't crossed. And I look forward to meeting you in person one day myself. I really do.
Might bump into each other on Tinder or who knows?
Sounds cool. Thanks, James.
Thanks, dude.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with James Day. He's an awesome photographer. You definitely have to check out his work. I've picked out a few of my favorite images of his work and put them into the show notes over at photobizx.com/62. On that page, you'll also find links to anything and everything that James mentioned in the interview, the raw digital and film lab that he uses and recommends for all his outsourcing, Vision Art, Instaproof, the different photographers that he talked about, the Fujifilm X-T1 camera. So everything and everything is over there in the show notes. There's also a collection of some of my favorite photos that he shot from last year's weddings, and links obviously to his website, Facebook, and Instagram. If there's a specific question that you wish I did ask that I didn't, or you didn't hear get asked, and you'd like to know for yourself, use the comment section in the show notes. You can ask anything you like. You can be as specific as you want. You could say thanks to James for coming on the show. Throw whatever you want in the comment section. I'd also love to read about your biggest takeaway. What is something that you would like to implement as a result of what James had to say in today's interview? Now, if you are a premium member, you've obviously heard the whole interview. If you're not a premium member, there was a stack more that we covered, and I talk a little bit about that in the show notes as well. If you want to hear more about how James has been achieving his success and how exactly he's been using social media. On the topic of social media, when I finished editing the interview for this episode with James, I have to go back and put together all the links for the show notes. I also follow James on Facebook and Instagram now as well. And I did notice there's he gets a lot of response to a lot of the things he posts on there. He's got a lot of followers, a lot of fans, and often I see people throw questions at him that go unanswered. So I actually sent James a follow-up question, and I asked him about his social media, and sometimes there are questions there that he just doesn't answer. From what I understand with social media, it's really important to reply to anyone about anything that you possibly can and stay up to date with all that stuff. So I asked James about that, his approach, because it's obviously working for him. He's booked solid. He's doing these 60 weddings a year. I did ask him about that social media approach, and he replied to me with these comments. If I'm online as the question comes through, I often will reply. However, I do get a little overwhelmed sometimes with the amount of online communication that I'm always faced with. And if there's a choice between taking more time out of my schedule to reply to the questions on my Facebook or spend time with my family or friends, I'll always choose the latter. I do love getting to know the people who interact with me on my page. In fact, last year I devoted a whole month to meeting people who I'd previously met through social media. I went for a bushwalk with two of these people today, in fact. So that was James's reply to my question about social media. And look, and I love that answer. I love that he isn't willing to sacrifice family time and time with friends to spend on social media. I'm not sure if I was on the other end, if I was the person asking the questions and if I didn't get a reply, how I would feel. But after having heard James's reply, I can totally understand that and I can see exactly where he's coming from. And I love the idea that it's family first, family and friends first. And he also alluded to that point or that fact in the interview, especially with the idea of starting a family at some stage as well. He really does have to, like we all do, to prioritize our time. Otherwise, it's all work, no play. Everyone has heard the saying that no one has ever been on their deathbed wishing that they'd spent more time at work. Great response, James. Thank you so much for getting back to me with that reply. And like I said to you, the listener, if you've got any follow-up questions, make sure you use the comment section in the show notes. I'm sure James will be happy to come back and answer those for you. In the last couple of episodes, I've mentioned that I had a camera strap to give away from Lucky Straps, and I totally messed it up in the first episode, but last week I did get things right and got a bunch of different replies, and I'm happy to say the winner of the camera strap that I do have here, the brown camera strap, is Anais Jain from New Zealand. So Anais, make sure you get in touch with me with your postal details, and you'll have a brand new camera strap from Lucky Camera Straps in Australia heading your way. Thanks so much to everyone that entered the competition as well.
It's shout out time.
So one big shout out for today's episode, and that was to iTunes reviewer Brendan from Happily Ever After Films in the USA. I think this is the first podcast review or the iTunes review from a videographer. So very cool. I know there's always a little bit of competition, a little bit of jousting between photographers and videographers, but I can definitely see that as far as the business of getting bookings and the business of videography goes, the content here on the podcast would certainly apply. So Brendan, mate, thank you so much for taking the time to leave your review and your rating. Love reading what you wrote there and do really appreciate it. Just before we close out this episode of the podcast, I did mention right at the start of today's show that I'm planning a couple of very special episodes in the coming months. I've been in touch with two of the most popular guests that I've had on the podcast since starting, and they are Matt from Matt and Katie Photographers and also Steve Saporito, the portrait doctor. And what we're going to be doing is answering your questions for them. But we're going to do this a little bit differently. What I'm going to ask you to do, or what I am asking you to do, is send in any business-related question that you want answered. And what I'm planning to do is ask Matt on one episode of the podcast your question. I'm going to ask exactly the same question to Steve in the following episode. Now, they won't hear each other's answers because I'll be recording them a day apart. And the whole idea of this was to get a viewpoint and answer for your question from a working photographer and also from Steve, who is a studio transformer and gets businesses turning a profit real quick. So it'll be very cool to hear two different points of view to the same exact questions. So what I need you to do is either email me a question. It's andrew@photobizx.com. Or you can just jump over to the show notes and post your question there and I'll grab them. So it doesn't matter if the guys see the questions because they can answer the questions any way they like. But the whole idea is that they won't hear each other's answers and we get two totally different points of view, one from a working photographer, one from someone who gives advice to photographers on how to be more profitable. So I do need your help for that one. Make sure you shoot me an email with your question. It can be any question, any business-related photography question you like. It doesn't have to be wedding specific or portrait specific. It can be about marketing, pricing, Facebook, Twitter, social media, anything you like. I don't care. You ask the question, I'll get it answered from Matt and also from Steve. Should be cool, something new. We'll give it a go and see what sort of response we get. Okay, that's going to wrap things up for this episode of the podcast. If you are enjoying the interviews, if you are enjoying the podcast every single week, you could do me a massive favor. Go and tell another photographer about the podcast. It could be via email. It could be over lunch. It could be in one of your Facebook groups. It could be via Instagram. It doesn't matter. If you're loving the show, you feel it's worth telling someone else about, then I would love it. Appreciate it if you would do that. Okay, that's it for me. Have an awesome week, and I'll chat to you soon. Bye for now.
Enjoyed this episode, then head to www.photobizx.com and join the community of like-minded, ambitious photographers. Learn from the pros, follow their techniques and strategies. Get your photography business profitable now.